Today is March 2nd, 2016. This is episode number 349 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Bat Label Inspector. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on anything or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I know that you chose today's title just to please me.
I did. My job was to make sure that the labels on the Batman TV show from the 60s were accurate.
And you did an excellent job because they are stunningly accurate.
If you'd like to see some of these, you can go.
You can go on Twitter. Go check out the Twitter account, Bat Labels.
I think it's singular.
Oh, Bat Label? Is that what it is?
I think that I am wrong.
Bat Labels.
Bat Labels, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At Bat Labels. And you can see some of the fantastic Bat Labels.
I'm absolutely loving that Twitter account. Loving it to pieces. I'm wishing that that I had bought one of the henchmen t-shirts before they sold out. I don't know what I was thinking holding off.
Just have one of those made out.
I could, but if I had bought one, I would have been supporting Bat Labels.
It wouldn't be real.
No, it wouldn't be official.
Official fandom made unlicensed stuff, but official.
Right.
Anyway, so
and that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
Well, we got all this FBI thing.
Oh, see, I thought we just wrapped up everything by talking about Bat Labels.
There's more FBI stuff. I mean, this has been an unending onslaught of news and developments.
Yeah, it's 2.5 weeks of nonstop news updates, changes, twists. And the latest
filings.
Yep. The latest news comes from the House Judiciary Committee's hearing on encryption. And that was yesterday. And that's where Apple Senior Vice President and General Counsel Bruce Sewell testified, as did FBI Director James Comey, as well as Worcester Polytechnic Institute Professor Susan Landau. She, by the way, is my new technology hero.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Oh, man, I'm totally, totally stoked about her. And let's see. Then there was also
Cy Vance.
Yes, who is the New York District Attorney from Manhattan.
Yeah, he was. I didn't pay as close. Okay, so let's start at the top. So basically it was broken down into two quote unquote panels. The first panel was merely James Comey, the director of the FBI, and the way a House hearing works, the way this particular House hearing worked, each member of the hearing got 5 minutes to ask the panelists whatever they wanted to ask. Now technically that's what's supposed to happen. Historically, the way these tend to go is a lot of times those 5 minute sessions are used for grandstanding.
Yes, and we did see that yesterday.
For rather than driving questions, actually to just use them to make statements and criticize and that sort of thing. This one, though, I didn't see. There wasn't actually a lot. There was not a lot of grandstanding.
No, most of the grandstanding I saw happened in the second half of the hearing. And and it was primarily from people who were speaking from what appeared to be a position of ignorance.
Are you referring to, say, Trey Gowdy?
Yes, I am.
and Mr. Sensenbrenner.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And actually, let me pull up the members. House Judiciary. I was looking at this yesterday, actually. Membership. There we go. We have... It wasn't the full House Judiciary Committee, because it's actually quite large. There's like 40 people on it. Daryl Liza was there. Jim Sensenbrenner. We've got Steve King was there, wasn't he? Didn't he make a few comments?
I believe so.
Yes, he did. He did, because I was kind of rude. Thankfully, Louis Gohmert, the Gohmert pile of elected officials, was not there, but he is part of the committee. Trey Gowdy, boy, he makes me mad sometimes.
Can't imagine why.
And we had a couple of those were all Republicans. There were a couple more there too. Representative John Conyers Jr. was there, which is so funny that he's junior and that he's like 80 something. Zoe Lofgren was there. There were some other people there.
Yeah. And the rest.
And the rest. If we left you out, Representative
Marianne. Don't feel bad. We also left out Marianne and the professor.
Yeah, we do apologize. Now, here's the thing. I think we differed on this. I came out disliking Director Comey less.
No, I don't know if I came out disliking him less, but I came out with more respect for him as a representative for the FBI, because I felt that that he presented himself overall very well. I know some people are saying he appeared like a clown, and I've just seen comments like on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. So here, let me tell you what I liked about him.
Okay.
First of all, we didn't have he has this is the second hearing in a row where he's gone to efforts to not demonize Apple, and to he actually kind of had a way of explaining a previous accusation that Apple was only doing this out of as a marketing stunt. And his way of explaining that was a lot less offensive than the way it has come off in written statements from Director Comey and from the FBI. And his way of saying it is that this is their job. Their job is to be responsible to their shareholders and to maximize profits. But he said that he thought that every player in this issue was a good person trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, I thought that was a really smart...
reversal. It's definitely reversal from earlier positions where they were quite frankly accusing Apple of a PR stunt.
Yes, I agree. And the way he presented that same bit of information during the hearing was much better. And it even if he didn't mean it, it created the impression that he did have compassion for Apple's position, and I don't want to say tactical standpoint, but that's the first thing that comes to mind. That was a really smart way to approach Apple's position.
Well, it is, because I think that they've been kind of hammered on reaction to their initial salvos and all this, and they've been hammered by several of the developments, actually. But before we get to that, another thing that I liked about Director Comey's testimony was that he gave what I thought were accurate, unbiased responses when he was asked about things that didn't involve his opinion.
Yes, and that was nice.
And it was extremely professional, and I had a specific example in my mind. When he was asked about some of the ramifications, he said that yes, it could become a precedent, for instance. He also said, I hate this. I can't remember the specific things that struck me about the honest and unbiased answers that he gave. Now, don't get me wrong. He answered plenty of things with his opinion, and I disagree with his opinions. He's still on the wrong side of this. What he wants will put us all in danger.
Yes, I agree.
But he didn't come off as a zealot, and he didn't come off as blind, and he also didn't come off as, I didn't see him twisting anything. He made several comments that I disagreed with a lot, but I didn't see him twisting anything. The things that I disagreed with him on were our opinions. Mm-hmm. He wasn't trying to assert his opinion on some of these things as facts when they weren't. Which, so it's good. It's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Step in the right direction. And even when he was kind of pinned against the wall, in a manner of speaking, by Congressman Darulisa, while he sounded like a broken record saying, "I don't know, I don't know, I don't know," he didn't lose his cool. And he just stayed calm through all of that, which was really good. And it does not surprise me that he was able to maintain his cool through all of that. It's not like this is his first time in a position where he is going to be scrutinized. I mean, he was a corporate attorney for a long time, and you don't become the director of the FBI by being someone that gets nervous easily and can't present themselves with an air of confidence.
Right. The other really interesting thing about his panel, his session, was that I counted four members of the committee. I think there were 12 people asking questions. Does that sound right?
It seemed like there was 50, but yeah, 12 sounds about right.
And four of those appeared to side with the FBI, and the other eight appeared not to.
Which I found fascinating. I thought that there would be more people siding with the FBI.
Yeah, and I thought that at the very least it would break down to some roughly partisan dividing lines. I figured that Republicans would basically be on the law enforcement side of things, and that Democrats would be on the privacy side of things. And in reality, the Republicans are split, and there's one fellow, he is an African American, and I didn't catch his name, and I have not recognized him in the member list. And I don't know who he is or who he represents or what affiliation he had.
Let's see. There was one person that was from Louisiana. He was younger. And the older gentleman...
Cedric Richmond? He represents the 2nd District in Louisiana.
Yes, yes.
That sure doesn't look like it, no. He appeared to be siding on the law enforcement side, didn't he?
Yes. He even brought people that were... family members from a woman that was shot and killed in a really tragic situation. She was pregnant. And someone showed up at her front door. She opens the door, and they shot and killed her. She died, and her unborn child died as well. She was keeping a diary of her life on her iPhone. None of her family members knew the passcode, and no one can get into the phone.
Right. Many people think that her diary may well have information about this. We don't know, of course, but many people think that it does. And, of course, no one can get into it. Right. And just like the with the terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California, some folks are holding up the pain and suffering of the survivors of this victim as a reason to throw us all under the bus and ruin our, you know, and wreck our security and privacy. But there was also Representative Hank Johnson, and he was also a Democrat, and he also appeared to be on the law enforcement side. So it actually may be five on the law enforcement side and seven on the side of privacy. And they were not partisan. There was no partisan breakdown. You have Mr. Richmond, you have Mr. Johnson, both on the Democratic side. The rest of the Democrats were all on the privacy side. And on the Republican side, you had Daryl Issa, who is definitely a conservative. You might remember his name from the pointless and futile Benghazi hearings.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he was leading the charge on that for a long time. I think there was another Republican that was not on the side of law enforcement on this. It's a good thing Ted Poe was not on the law enforcement side. He was right on the side of privacy. So it was interesting. And here's another interesting aspect of that hearing. Most of the questions from the members were pretty good.
Yeah. Overall. Yes, I agree. I was very pleasantly surprised.
They got some things wrong.
Sure, which I totally expect, but they got far more right than I thought they would.
Yeah, they actually seem to grasp some of the technical aspects of this, and they certainly seem to grasp some of the nuances of the story. The most egregious thing that I found in error was when someone said that iCloud was hacked, referring to the celebrity nudes that were...
right, and iCloud was not hacked. Right. Right.
Yeah, that was bad security on the personal level, not
right. Like, that was social engineering.
That was social engineering, and we can still ding Apple for allowing unlimited tries.
Yes.
Which was the case at the time.
Not anymore.
Good thing.
Yes.
That was the biggest error that I heard, but even that was actually done in support of the side of privacy, because one of Director Comey's points is, well, Apple is just so good at secrecy, so really, you know, they should be able to create this tool that bypasses security on the iPhone, and they should be able to keep it safe, and you know, it should never leak to the public.
Which, for me, was a difficult moment to sit through, because that's patently wrong.
It is patently wrong, and it's annoyingly wrong, and it's a real cop-out, in my opinion. Several people questioned whether or not that could be the case, and the reason why the celebrity nude hacks were of course, they weren't actual hacks, but the nude leaks that were released last year, the reason why that came up is because this person said, well, you're saying that Apple is so good at security, and yet the company was hacked, which it wasn't. But whatever.
Right. But it still made a good point, which is that any company is the potential victim of a hacking incident.
Yeah, of course. And what Tim Cook has said is that once a tool like this is created, it will become the target of malicious actors around the world.
Of course it will.
You know, China would love to have this. Criminal organizations would love to be able to bypass security on an iPhone.
Of course. Yeah, and if you were someone that was a defendant in a criminal case, actually even a civil case, like let's say you're in the middle of a ugly divorce or a child custody case, the being able to contest the data recovered from your iPhone through these methods would be a big thing. And that means the code that Apple creates would all be open to scrutiny in court.
Right.
Which means everyone can get their hands on it, like across the board.
Right. So that argument is it's a cop out. It's factually wrong, and it's philosophically wrong too. It's just, I mean, you know, none of it's right.
Yeah. And yeah, so I had a really hard time with that part. Another observation I have about the way questions and comments and grandstanding went, the people that were leaning more towards the side that Apple was on, meaning protecting encryption, tended to ask more intellectual questions or on-topic questions. The people that were more in the FBI's camp tended to make statements or ask questions that felt very emotional.
Well, yeah, those folks tended to be asking questions of along the lines of, shouldn't you be able to service a warrant?
Right. And what about nuclear war? What if if a location for a nuclear bomb was on an iPhone?
Yeah, Trey Gowdy was like really incensed that Apple didn't come to the hearing with proposed legislation, which is just
ridiculous,
idiotic, you know, not unsophisticated. I don't care for Representative Gowdy.
He was very frustrating to watch. I did love how Bruce Sewell maintained his composure through that inappropriate and unprofessional tirade, and responded with "You do your job and let us do ours."
Right. Yeah. Bruce Sewell's response to, so Representative Gowdy wanted. Basically to know what it was that Apple would support. He said, you know, all you're doing is sitting there complaining, which is,
you're just saying no, 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 no,
which is just, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's a childish argument. It's so unsophisticated. It lacks any grasp of reality whatsoever. It is bizarrely myopic and
now I can't remember, is he the same person that made what to me felt like a non sequitur comparison, where he said the FBI can compel doctors to take a bullet out of someone, yet you can't unlock an iPhone?
Yeah. Yes. He was basically saying that Apple has no right of free, can't use a free speech complaint. Apple has said that basically you can't compel us to write code because that's a violation of the Fifth Amendment or First Amendment. Sorry about that. And Representative Gowdy was saying, well, the government compels people to do stuff all the time. And including, as you said, you know, compelling a doctor to take a bullet out.
I'm curious. A
couple of other examples.
Do you know off the top of your head of a case where the FBI ordered a doctor to remove a bullet from someone? Off the top of my head, I don't. Okay.
I don't remember the specifics. I do believe that there has been, I don't know the specifics, and I don't know the order. I don't know if the All Writs Act was invoked. I don't remember the specifics of the order. It was a long time ago that I ran across this. But there have been, the doctors have been compelled to work on people that they didn't want to work on.
Okay. Well, still,
I don't remember the specifics, and it's also not the sort of thing that Representative Gowdy is going to lie about.
No, I didn't assume he was lying. It was just when he made that comment, I was a bit surprised, in that I could not think of any instance when that had happened. But I mean, there's a lot of cases happening, and I don't follow all of them. Still, I didn't think it was an appropriate comparison, because it's not like the doctor had to invent a procedure.
Okay, well, true, but they were made to do something, and that's what Representative Gowdy is focusing on. And here's the other thing. Do you remember? I asked this like there's any chance that you wouldn't. Do you remember when we had our friend Ewan Rankin on the show?
I do. I really like Ewan a lot.
That was last Friday, actually, just a few days ago. And part of Ewan Rankin's thing is that he doesn't think there should be an unbreakable box. He just thinks that foundationally speaking, there should not be anything that the government can't access via warrant.
And I just want to say that I fully support Ewan's right to have his opinion, even if I disagree with it.
Well, philosophically, I actually agree with it.
Interesting. Okay.
The problem is you can't have that and have security.
That's true. Yes.
That's my problem. My problem is where that philosophical desire runs smack into reality. If the government can get into it, so can everybody else. And this is you can't avoid that. So if we want to have secure devices that are secure from the bad guys, unfortunately, they must also be secure from the good guys, because you can't have both.
That's correct.
Okay, so with that in mind, Representative Gowdy was approaching his, and I'm speaking for him, obviously, I'm in no position to speak for him, but this is how.
No, this is our show. You're totally in that position.
Well, this is my interpretation of.
Are you going to do a voice with it?
No.
Oh, okay.
It'll also sound insulting if I try to do his voice. He's got a very distinctive accent. He's approaching this from the standpoint of, we have terrorists. We need to stop the terrorists. All of us should willingly do what it takes to stop the terrorists. End of concept. Right? He's not interested. I don't know if he doesn't know the technical aspects of what's involved.
I'm betting he doesn't. But go ahead.
I'm betting he doesn't. I'd like to think that he doesn't. Right? I very much like to think so. But Ewan Rankin understands it. And Ewan Rankin very much thinks that there should be no unbreakable box.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's someone that we know and respect. We respect Ewan. He's very familiar with the concepts involved here. And he disagrees with us. He thinks there should be no unbreakable boxes. Well, Representative Gowdy thinks the same thing. Representative Sensenbrenner thinks the same thing. We should all be doing whatever it is we need to do to help the government stop terrorism. That is the start of the argument and the end of the argument for these folks.
You know, I totally get the argument that we need to do what we can to prevent terrorist acts and other criminal acts. I think that's an idea that most people will gladly get behind. The problem then comes in with, how do we go about doing that? And if that involves creating breakable encryption, like intentionally breakable encryption, then we have failed.
Yeah. Representative Richmond, who is concerned about the victims, the victim of, I honestly, I can't remember her name, and I'm sorry about that, but this is an issue with names, not the particular case. It was concerned about the woman who was murdered.
Yeah, the Louisiana murder. Mm-hmm.
His focus is on the pains and suffering of the victim and catching the person who did this heinous crime. And he also, for him, that's the beginning of it, the end of it. We have a device who the lawful owners want it broken, and we just should be able to get into that. Right? That's why we should be able to get into it, and that's the start and end of the argument as far as he's concerned. Again, I'm in no position to actually speak for him.
I think that's a really good paraphrase, though. And man, I can sympathize with the family. What a horrible thing to have to face. And this is something that they face every day for the rest of their lives. And I would want to find any way I could to get closure if I were in their position. But on the other hand, I would like to think that I would also be able to weigh the value and the consequences of destroying the privacy and security and encryption for all people.
And I would like to think that too. We don't know. We cannot possibly put ourselves in the position and the shoes of these people.
And I hope we never have to. And I hope our listeners never have to.
And the same thing is true for the victims of the terrorist attacks in San Bernardino or any other terrorist attack. We can't put ourselves in those in their shoes. But that doesn't mean that we have to subscribe to the notion that their pain and suffering should be everyone's undoing. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, I'm with you.
Our safety and security should not be sacrificed on the altar of any individual's pain and suffering. Doesn't mean that I don't have empathy for that pain and suffering. Doesn't mean that I don't want justice for the woman who was murdered. Doesn't mean that I don't want to know who the two terrorists might have been communicating with before the attacks in San Bernardino. That's not what I mean. What I recognize, however, is that we can't have a perfectly safe society. Right? We cannot have a society and a culture that is devoid of all threats, because the only way to get that is to live in a society with no freedom.
And even then, the no threats promise is hollow.
Yeah, because the threat then becomes the government.
Right.
I mean, it's in a free society comes with risks. You cannot escape that.
That's true. And knowing that and knowing what many of those risks entail, I would rather face the risks or know that those risks are there than not have freedom.
Correct. Or I agree, at the very least. Now, different people may have different opinions.
Of course. But you see, that's one of the beautiful things about our country and our government, which is that it's okay for us to have different opinions and to voice those opinions.
Yes. And this is a discussion all of us need to be having. There are plenty of people who will happily trade freedom for security. Although they just want to be safe more. And usually it's more like they want their families to be safe.
Right. And if you look at the way this ends up playing out, the cynic in me wants to modify your statement and say people want to have the false sense of security.
That's not fair.
No, of course it's not fair.
They want security, and we and then other people like us might see that notion as a false sense. But that's not what they're wanting. They're not wanting a false sense of security. They're wanting security, and they think they can get it.
Right.
In our opinion, they can't.
Yes. So we are in agreement. You just don't like my words.
No, I don't. I don't, because you're ascribing.
What I'm doing is projecting.
Yes.
And so, as you can see, I've been really concerned about projecting. You can hear it in my voice, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah.
CIA and the NSA, on to lighter topics.
Oh, man, what a day when the CIA and NSA are our lighter topics.
Yeah, they're not, though. So Director John Brenner, he'd be the director of the CIA, and deputy director of the NSA, Rick Leggett or Leggett? What do you think? L-E-D-G-E-T-T? It's probably Leggett.
It's a single G?
Yeah.
Leggett.
Leggett. So they did a little committee, too. They were speaking in front of the House Intelligence Committee, a separate committee altogether from the Judiciary Committee that we were talking about earlier. Now, I didn't watch this. This actually came via Gizmodo. And is there someone else that reported on this?
Probably.
The thing that they said that got me up in arms is they were essentially blaming... They were blaming the press and dissemination of information for terrorists turning to encryption methods to hide their communications from surveillance, from our surveillance.
There's a couple things in that where I am really upset and concerned.
So Director Brenner said, quote, "The ability of these terrorists to communicate with one another, that makes it very..." Should be a comma there. "That makes it very difficult to uncover." Well, I don't like the way he said this. "The ability of these terrorists to communicate with one another that makes it very difficult to uncover has been increasing." Wow, that doesn't even make any sense, does it? "It's very frustrating, but very concerning. They follow the press. They follow these discussions." Continuing, he said, quote, "We track when our foreign..." This would be Director Leggett. He said, quote, "We track when our foreign intelligence targets talk about the security of their communication, and we see a growing number of them because of what's in the press about the value of encryption moving towards that." So there is no doubt that those are both two true statements, right?
Sure.
What concerns me is that we have two of our top intelligence people basically just wishing that everyone would shut up talking about this encryption stuff, because if everyone would just shut up about it, they could keep surveilling the bad guys.
Right. Like the bad guys, the only way they find out about ways to protect their own secrets is by reading news reports.
That, and the fact that one of the reason why the press is talking about things like encryption is because we need it to protect ourselves from the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So this it's doubly concerning to me. I'm so tense about it. I don't like the head in the sand aspect of what they're saying. I don't like any of it.
All right, here's another part of it I don't like, which is the implication that by having free speech and the ability for the press to speak and share information is something that they're having an issue with.
Right. Right. I feel like... Sorry about that noise. I feel like our intelligence services got lazy. Now, don't get me wrong. They're all working hard, and they have an incredibly difficult job. That job is made absolutely and positively more difficult by the challenges of modern technology, especially the rate of evolution of technology. These things are absolutely true. But I feel like they got, and I guess so. All right. So part of what I'm going to say is based on reading I did about the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. Mm-hmm. And the struggles that our intelligence services had dealing with getting information. And part of it is that we started putting more emphasis in slurping up data and sifting through it than we did in having foreign assets, boots on the ground, as it were. You know, actually having people out there who know people, who talk to people, and they get information, which is the way spying used to be done. or it was at the very least, it was like, you know, the heavy lifter of spying. Sure. And the reason why we started putting a lot less emphasis on this, and this is like some of the reasons why we had some troubles dealing with the aftermath of the Second Iraq War, actually being in Iraq and not understanding what everybody was up to, is because we just didn't have any resources in the ground. We had the same problem in Afghanistan, this is my understanding. And the reason why the intelligence services started putting more and more emphasis on slurping up communications is because it's a lot easier. And mm-hmm. I get that easy is sexy and it's attractive and it's seductive.
Mm-hmm.
But just as it is true that our intelligence services have been able to slurp up data across the internet, across phone lines by getting, you know, taps directly into to backbones, which is what all of our carriers gave to the government in the wake of 9/11. Mm-hmm. I understand how easy that stuff is, but the reality is that it gives the bad guys a lot of the same access.
Yes, of course it does. Hey, I want to play devil's advocate for a moment.
Sure.
And I'm going to throw out an idea that comes to the defense of law enforcement. And okay. And this is the fact that technology has been advancing faster than they can keep up with or adapt to. And so now they're in a very frustrating position where they don't know how to cope and respond to the new technologies that we have, the new ways of protecting data, the new ways of communicating, the new ways of carrying out crime. And that's a very hard place to be in. And so you start grabbing at whatever potential lead system you can get. And mass surveillance has been one of those. And trying to force companies to make it easy to access our encrypted data, just as the FBI is trying to do right now with Apple. These, I think, are natural paths for law enforcement to take while they go through the slow process for them of learning and adapting to the new technologies that we have. I think this is an ongoing problem. This is not the first time that law enforcement has been in a position where they just simply couldn't keep up with the technology. Now, that said, I really don't like where they're trying to go with this. I don't like the threat to my privacy and my security, as well as privacy and security of everyone else and our country.
Two things about that.
Mm-hmm.
You pitch it as a stopgap measure while law enforcement and I'm assuming you're including that with the CIA and the NSA within
that too. That all falls under the law enforcement umbrella.
I don't see it as a stopgap. I actually see it as this is easier, let's do that. And then we're not, mm-hmm. and then relying on that, especially when it actually gets information, relying on that, and then wanting to sort of like keep everything in place and make sure that they continue that they continue to have this open access to stuff, even as we learn that open access is dangerous.
Yep. And I have that same issue. I don't see this as something that they're looking at as a stopgap, just the path that to them seems most reasonable without really having the grasp on the totality of the circumstances that they really need. So, yes, this is not something that would be stopgap measure. You're right. Once they have this access, they're not going to want to give it up.
No, they're ever. They're going to want to keep it that way.
And of course.
That's part of the problem.
Yes, I agree completely.
And like the NSA. So another thing is this. It's true that law enforcement has a lot of difficulty keeping up with technology. But the NSA in particular actually has some of the smartest people and some of the most resources and assets in developing and keeping up with technologies.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I'm going to jump back to the hearings for a second to validate what you just said. And Susan Landau said during the hearings yesterday that from her experience, the NSA currently has the capability of hacking into an iPhone.
She said that. I don't know that that's true, though.
She was in a very bad place to be lying.
Well, she could be mistaken without lying.
That's true. She could be mistaken, but with her credentials, I would be very surprised if she was lying. I think she made that comment because she has a very reasonable belief that the NSA does, in fact, have the ability to hack into an iPhone.
Well, to that end, this is an example of a further example of what I think is part of the problem. The NSA has been looking for and developing zero-day exploits.
Mm-hmm.
And then keeping them for their own use rather than alerting Apple and Google
mm-hmm.
and Microsoft and BlackBerry, lol.
yes.
Because this is not just mobile communications, actually. It's, you know, they look for this stuff all over the place. But they look for and develop zero-day exploits, and then they don't tell anyone because they want to be able to use them.
Of course.
That is a huge problem. Part of their mission is not just to stop the bad guys. It's to help the good guys. General Hayden, I had forgotten that because, you know, we don't ever see that side of the NSA anymore. Right. But General Hayden pointed that out. He said that that's one of their missions, is to help us strengthen ourselves against the bad guys. And that practice of developing and finding zero-day exploits and not alerting the manufacturer so they can patch them is philosophically F-word.
Let's see. F-word. F-word. Messed up.
I'm looking here on Susan. Maybe I missed her saying that. I'd like to ask about law enforcement finding technical solutions. So this was Judy Chu, Democrat, asking. I'd like to find out about law enforcement finding technical solutions. I understand that there may be other methods or solutions for law enforcement when it comes to recovering data on a smartphone. Professor Landau argues in her testimony later today that solutions to accessing the data already exist within the forensic analysis community, solutions which may include jailbreaking the iPhone, among others. You can't jailbreak an iPhone that's locked. Or she says other entities within the federal government may have the expertise to crack the code, may have the expertise. Has the FBI pursued other methods, tried to get help from within the federal government, such as from agencies like the NSA? James Comey said, yes is the answer. We talk to anybody who will talk with us, and I welcome additional suggestions.
Yes. He also said, if we could have done this quietly and privately, we would have done it.
I believe that.
I think that if they could have done it quietly and privately, they would have jumped on the opportunity because that's a great tactical advantage for the FBI if they know they have the ability to hack into our smartphones, but the rest of the world thinks they don't. Now, Susan Land also said the FBI needs to take a page from the NSA.
So the Washington Times said that Susan Lundell told lawmakers that the NSA may have an exploit for the shooter's iPhone, but is unwilling to make it available outside the agency. She said, and I'm quoting, Director Comey said, we've talked to everyone who will talk to us, but I was at an event held by the FCC and some senior people from DOJ were there. And I said, well, NSA has skill X and skill Y. And they said they don't share them with us except in extraordinary circumstances. That's not exactly some kind of tangible proof that the NSA can crack an iPhone.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
It's not, and when I say it's not exactly, I would say it's not at all. So, I mean, here we have.
I like it better when you say it's not exactly. But go ahead.
Well, here we have a party not in the NSA who's not talking to anyone in the NSA who thinks that the NSA can maybe do it. And some other people who are also not in the NSA says, well, they just don't share those things with us. But no one's actually saying, yes, they can.
All right, that's a good point.
I'd actually be shocked if the NSA could, to be honest.
Well, I think it's plausible that they could, but that the methods that we have been thinking about are not the route they're taking, and that they're doing something that's far more innovative and may likely be fairly destructive to the device to get the content that they want, like even going beyond what's the term, decapping.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that don't know what that means, it's a process where you take the chip and then you actually pull the sandwich apart, so to speak, so that you can get at the literal circuits inside the wafer. And there's a lot you can do once you actually get at those little microcircuits inside the wafer.
Well, and then I don't actually know the specifics of this, but there were a couple of members who were honing in on the idea that the FBI could have made a copy of the data on the iPhone and then made unlimited copies and then, you know, using only the first five of the 10 that you get, since the second five take forever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Using only the first five attempts that you get, to break into the iPhone before it's erased. Trying that unlimited times until they act, because there's only 10,000 combinations.
Right, on a four-digit code.
Right.
Now,
as a matter of fact, actually, you know what they could do is they make the if you can copy the data in that way and that it's actually usable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume that they can actually clone the device, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
They could try the 10 and see if it actually erases. And if it doesn't erase, then we have a lot less to worry about, because we don't know that the bad guy had that activated.
That's true. We do not know that. Now, the person that suggested that was Mr. Issa, and he...
I think it's Issa, by the way.
Issa. Okay. Issa. And what he was doing was just tossing out of what he considered to be ideas. And so he tossed that out and then said, have you tried this? Have you asked Apple if it's possible?
Yeah, well, he was specifically asking, knowing that the FBI had not tried that, he was asking, have you tried this? And if you haven't tried this, why haven't you tried this? And if you haven't tried this, why are we supposed to listen to you at all?
Right.
Because you know, these are all some basic things and you should bloody well get on with it.
Right. And those were questions that Director Comey responded, I don't know. And to one of the statements that Mr. Issa made, he said, I don't even think I fully understand the question.
Yeah, well, Director Comey has made no bones about the fact that he's not he's not a geek.
Right. And
he's got people that work for him that are, and he trusts them.
Right. And so, and I believe those were some of the comments that people are saying, oh, he looks like a clown. I think it was smart of him to not try and fumble his way through a question where he didn't know the answer.
No, that would be clownish.
Because
you're going to get busted five ways Sunday, eight ways to Sunday, I think is the phrase.
Right. So I took us kind of down a rabbit hole with that.
That's okay. It was a fine rabbit hole. And I say, I don't know.
Yeah, going back to the whole thing about NSA and CIA being upset about the media. My biggest concern about that is it sounds like a threat to freedom of speech and freedom of press.
Well, it sounds like they want there to be a threat, and there's a difference. They're not threatening.
That's true. They can't. Yeah, they can't truly threaten. But the notion that this is something that is in their mind is concerning.
Yeah, find new ways to deal with this. Encryption's not going away. It's not going away. But there was another thing that several or at least multiple members of the committee a point that they made was the reality that if we take away encryption from Americans, the bad guys will still have it.
Yes.
And I was delighted to see that point made. And but the thing is, Mr. Comey recognized that. So, like, dude, please accept the realities of what you're saying. You seem to accept some of these individual ramifications, but you're not putting it together with the idea that you need to stop pursuing this.
The logical disconnect there was surprising.
Yeah, super annoying. All right, Apple's doing a press event on March 21st, and we're going to get some new iPads, maybe a new iPhone. Okay, there we go.
There we go. Hey, you wrapped up that topic beautifully because we're pretty much out of time. Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. Let's see what happens the week of March the week of March 31st.
Are we still going to be talking? We're going to try, folks. We're going to try to have other things to talk about for our next show. Maybe. We might not succeed because we actually have someone who may be able to shed some light on some of the esoteric aspects of American law on this.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We're working on it.
Working on it, yes. We have top. Unfortunately, though, we have top men on it.
Ooh. Can't wait to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think this is a part where I hit the button and make music happen. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And please stay subscribed because we love having you around.
We do. The reason for the season. Our listeners. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.